And welcome to episode 36 of the Book Wars Pod. Yay.
Woo!
We are slowly marching towards 50, and that's kind of scary. I'm Kate, and I'm here with Chris and Kristen, and today we are wrapping up Aftermath by Chuck Wendig, so we're going to be discussing the whole span of the book. And I think we just picked up a few new followers, thanks to our lovely friend at Southern Cynic, who gave us a boost. So if this is your first time, we are a Star Wars canon book and other media form analysis podcast. We do not review books. Every single episode is full of spoilers, so if that's not your thing, then please run away and find a different podcast.
Snape kills Dumbledore.
Snape kills Dumbledore, first of all.
Chris.
Good one, Chris.
I'm living up to the promises that you're making. We're full of spoilers.
Full of spoilers.
On or off topic, full of spoilers.
Okay, that's actually true. Now I'm sad inside.
Yeah.
Anyways, what are you drinking, Christopher, that you were so sassy to me?
I am drinking another Josef's Brau Radler from Trader Josef. Just like I was last week. Because
fuck you.
I do drink beer. I just haven't been in a beer mood this week.
Fuck off with your Trader Josef.
You guys make me laugh with like how slowly
we
you
drink
go
beer.
Through beer. Because like, you saw the amount of beer I bought last week, and I was like, I kind of need to go get more.
Yeah.
So I got two more six packs and a four pack. It's like,
we
each
had a beer last night, and it was like, oh, we're having beer. One of those nights.
I know.
To be fair, like, we don't really drink wine or anything else at home. It's like, beer is the only thing we generally drink
okay.
at home.
So we drink more wine.
We just go the fuck through it.
Yeah, we drink more wine, and also it's just me slamming gin because I have depression, so, you know.
I know. Coping mechanisms other than healthy ones.
So, Keeks, what are you drinking?
I've had this on the pod before, but I think this is the first time I've seen it out in 2018. But I'm drinking a Fort George Suicide Squeeze, which is an IPA.
A baseball reference.
It is a baseball reference.
Oh my god.
But it's also it's a collaboration actually with Suicide Squeeze Records, which is a record label up in Seattle. And it's really not probably anybody you would know, but they do, minus the Bears on the record, if you know that very obscure reference. But it's for some reason it's a special edition IPA, even though it like is out year-round. It's still says special edition IPA on it.
Special.
It's the one with the snack on it. And I think the can might be color-changing. TBD. I'll take an after picture if it turns a color when it's done. That's what Fort George likes to do. Their special.
Oh, I've been really bad about posting beer pictures lately. I'll try
You've
and get better at that.
Bad
it's fine.
About
I mean,
posting pictures.
Okay, I posted one today. Of you flipping off Star Wars Legion.
Because I won.
I know,
won.
It was really good.
Eat my ass.
That's fun. Fantasy Flight case, Games, thanks for the great game, always.
In case people care, which, hi Brian, it's Mosaic, Amarillo, and Citra hops. And it says specialty malt, so it must be some like bullshit they don't want to tell us, which is why it's special. But yeah, it's good. It says color-changing cans are available on a limited basis, touring the Pacific Northwest from time to time.
Oh,
so just fucking beer culture here is insufferable. And just before the podcast, Chris and I both put sweatshirts on, and I just realized I zipped myself into my chair. So just thought I would add that to let you know how I'm doing today. What are you drinking, Kate?
Sadness. I am drinking lavender Earl Grey tea. I am ill-advisedly drinking caffeine at this hour because I have had a migraine all day, so I've just been slamming Tylenol and tea and not being a good employee because I didn't go to work, but you know, whatever.
Lavender tea has caffeine in it.
Well, it's Lavender Earl Grey.
Oh my God. My brain. It's you fine. Did say that. I'm just...
That is okay.
Do you guys... Shall we Star Wars?
Yeah, man. Let's do Star Wars. The stars. Chris is playing HQ trivia at the same time we're recording this pod because he's a bad person.
Well, everybody's been playing HQ trivia. It's fine. I mean, I haven't been, but so. I like to help.
I'm so bad at it. All right. Well, while we
Kate just turned on HQ trivia.
I just, you know what?
If I'm going to that money, if I'm going to bear this shame, so's everybody
else.
If
this is what we're doing in the household today, then this is what we're doing in the household today. Anyway, while we wait for the host to get through his boring ass monologue.
God, they're so boring. This book, because that one and the other one that all of my like girlfriends that live in the house have been playing.
Yeah.
And God, they're the most boring. Oh, they so just boring. Find the most boring people to host.
I know. It's
pretty... really unfortunate.
So rude to Quiz Khalifa.
Oh my God. Chris.
Aesop Rocky.
Chris, you just like him
host
because
with
he makes.
The Hall of French toast.
He makes the most. Jewish jokes because he's Jewish.
I mean, that's why do you think I just brought up Pesach uh-huh. Rocky, which is the greatest alias that he could possibly come up with.
So, this is why I have depression. That's fine.
Don't put that on Chris, even in a jocular way.
I do what I want.
Oh, it's true. She sure does. Oh, I'm looking. Oh, this is, sorry, this is called non sequitur pod as usual, but, welcome to depression. I finally hung my Star Wars calendar up in March. you know, because just the, you know, 3 months is
congrats.
Usually the handicap on doing things. but the it, anyway, I hung it up right above like where I have all my Funkos, and it's really cute this month. It's because it's Darth Vader and Son calendar, so
oh,
it's just
nice.
Darth Vader. On where Yoda lives, and they're like splashing in a puddle, and he's like watching Luke make sure he doesn't drown.
Oh,
it's real cute.
On where,
sorry, I got
on
it.
Where Yoda lives. Anyway, okay, so actual Star War.
anyway, I'll take a picture of it and send it to you. I doubt we can Instagram it.
That's. I don't think they care.
Cool. We can tag them in it.
We sure can. I don't remember. A few books ago, Keeks, we were talking about recurring themes in Star Wars, and we were talking about trauma as we tend to do only every goddamn episode. But you brought up another good one that I was kind of surprised that up until that point we hadn't talked about, which is betrayal.
Yeah.
And I think we see a lot of that in Aftermath, so I just I thought we would have a really uplifting conversation to kick off this discussion, wrapping up the book by talking about different kinds of betrayal that we see here. One of the things that I noticed that a lot of the characters in this book have in common is that they're being pulled in multiple directions in terms of responsibility and duty and what they want to be doing with their lives. So the first character I have down here, obviously, is Nora, who is torn between her allegiance to the Rebellion and her loyalty or her ties to her family. Yeah, let us talk about that and how Temin feels sad and betrayed and is acting out because he's 15 and his mom left him with his aunts.
Can I bring up like one sub point of this that I think is just like worth talking about since this is kind of like the book for it?
Oh yeah.
Thanks. Sorry. God, that was awkward. Sorry.
Awkward. We never do that.
Right. I don't want to be normal right now. So we have here rebellion versus family, right? But what do we think about the allegiance of people to the rebellion versus the allegiance of those same people to the New Republic? Like, what kind of role do we think that being involved in the rebellion then kind of like, because they're kind of in this in-between stage now, right? Where there's still war stuff going on, right? That's what this book is about. But, I don't know. I just kind of, I was thinking like, is Nora like betraying the rebellion in a way by saying like, fuck it, I'm going to go back to my family, or is that totally okay because now it's the New Republic?
I think that's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer off the top of my head in terms of Nora, but I do think that it's interesting to frame that conversation alongside conversations we had about Bloodline by Claudia Gray in episodes 4 through 8, because I think we've talked about this a little bit in previous episodes about Aftermath, but it's really easy, I think, to be united behind a mission that's basically take down the Empire. You know, that's a really, really easy slogan to just have. And then, but when it comes to governing, we see that there are a lot of fractures amongst the coalition. Yeah, I think it does become different when reality sets in. It's kind of like when you like graduate school and then you're there and you're like, oh, now I gotta go be an adult. Fuck responsibility.
Like, I feel like we talked a little bit about this previously in when talking about Aftermath, when we were looking at some of the interludes on Chandrilla. But it's like the line in Hamilton, right? It's like, winning is easy, governing's harder.
Just keep using that line in every episode.
As soon as it stops being relevant, I'll stop using it.
It's fine, though, because you think that wait for it is only okay.
It's not what I said. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Welcome, new listeners. Chris's handle.
Constantly maligned is the term you're looking for. Constantly maligned.
Chris Sedor, you can direct your hatred.
Chris, you said what you said.
Oh, my God. That's right. No, I did say what I said, not what you said.
But I think, in a way, like, Nora is... We see her grappling with that, though, right? Like, we see her grappling with, can I, like, turn away from, quote-unquote, the rebellion and, like, go towards my family? So, in a way, like, that just kind of is another facet of this betrayal bit that we have been trying to dig into a little bit. I mean, I think kind of somewhere in the middle of the book, maybe closer to the end, but I mean, we definitely see Nora be like, you know what, fuck this, I'm like gonna take care of my kid,
right? I think I'm not a veteran, so I'm just gonna start talking out of my ass, because that's a great thing to do when you're in relation to veterans, so excuse me if I'm like saying wrong things, but my impression is that it can be really hard transitioning from an active duty military role to a more civilian one. And maybe it does kind of feel like you're abandoning the mission. You know, like she already knows, she knows right off the bat when she sees Temin again that he feels abandoned, he feels betrayed. But also, you know, she's, I think, probably carrying this guilt with her. Like, there's always something more to do, because that's just kind of the nature of life, right? It's just that she happens to have a job that actually matters to the future of the galaxy, as opposed to, like, pushing paper across, like, a desk in an office or something.
Yeah, and I think, kind of expanding on that, it's a question of priorities, right? Because with the rebellion, it was a question of, A, finding her husband, but B, this sense of the galaxy could literally, like, we'll literally be fucked if the rebellion fails. Whereas the New Republic, it's like, all right, we're more stable now. There are other people who can do this job besides me. And I think that's where you kind of get the reversion to making Temin the number one priority again.
How much do you guys think that, like, coming back and seeing Temin as this, like, kind of grown up, able to take care of himself, like, very able and kind of badass, even though he's annoying. I mean, we talked a little bit, I think, 2 episodes ago or something like that, or first episode, that Temin's supposed to be annoying. But he's also, like, very able and badass and, like, probably doing a lot of things he wasn't doing when Nora left to fight for the rebellion. So how much do you guys think that, like, coming back and seeing that side of him, do you think that had, like, a huge effect, or do you think that she would have kind of get to that same conclusion regardless?
I think it had a huge effect, at least as an accelerant, you know? I think she just by nature of what the plot is in the book, she gets smacked in the face with it a lot of the time. Like, oh, my son can do this now. And he can do this. And he built a murder bot. Like, what the fuck? So, yeah, I do think that kind of accelerates her just being like, oh, like, here's my capable child because I left him for 3 years to go fight this war. And now, ooh, maybe I should actually parent this person a little more actively.
And that's part of, and we talked about how, and I think, again, in earlier episodes, we talked about how Aftermath refers to not just the fate of the galaxy, but just the fate of everyone in war. And this is kind of, again, Kate and I are not veterans, but I, you know, have read about this kind of phenomenon of coming back from war and having to deal with the mental trauma of things not being the same, of things having moved on without you. And like, you come back after, you know, doing, you know, your duty to the galaxy and being a hero in your own circle and having a medal, and now 2 medals after this book, because you can have more than one. And, you know, you think that that entitles you a happy ending, and it doesn't. Like, you need to create your own happy ending. And I think that that's something that is really not dealt with in Star Wars, at least until The Last Jedi.
Yes.
Yeah, God, I just dropped yes. the mic there. Just
throwback.
Knocking it over.
Oh my God.
Yes. One more thing about Nora, though. The interesting thing is that she folded herself into the rebellion despite kind of like feeding this line to Temen that she was leaving to go find his dad. Like, we get a sense in Star Wars that, sorry as I belch into the mic, during this time of war, it kind of seems like if it was your mission to go find somebody, you could kind of fuck off and go do that. But I find it interesting that she said that and then ended up just going and totally signing up for the rebellion and fighting and, you know, being a pilot. It's almost like she was like looking for an excuse to be able to go, not to like minimize her husband, you know, losing her husband in whatever way, either he got arrested. We don't really know what happened to him, right?
You mean after he got arrested?
Yeah, he got arrested, right?
Yeah,
and then he was gone.
He was taken by the Empire. That's all we know.
Yeah.
Then, okay. Yeah. Cool. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Is that like, because I'm thinking like Jyn Erso, right? She was very much just like, I'm going to go do my own thing.
Yeah.
During this time.
Noted, not blonde Jyn Erso.
Oh my God, shut up.
Oh my God.
I think that's a really interesting point because, like you said, we see that all throughout Star Wars. People just kind of, like, you know, fucking off to go on their personal missions. I mean, Luke being the original, just fucking off.
Fucking off to Dagobah.
No, fucking off to Dagobah. Fucking off from Dagobah.
Fane fucking on Jellicane.
Kate's quitting the pod.
Kate's having a moment, everyone. It'll be fine.
Snape killed Dumbledore.
See, I knew you were going to say something that was going to make me punch you in the face because you were sitting there and you were like trying not to laugh at your own joke because you're a miserable human and you laugh at your own jokes. And then you just like dashed in there like to the mic and was just like, Thane. And I was just like... I'm going to
have nothing to say.
Sorry, you are making a very good point, both of you. Continue.
No, that was it. I just wanted to know your guys' reaction about that. But yeah, noted non-blonde Jyn Erso.
Right. Anyway, yeah. Point being, I think that's an interesting angle to look at it from, seeing as, you know, what's to stop Nora from going off and looking for him and finding some sort of mission as an excuse. Like, I mean, they did that in Rebels, returning to Lothal and everything, even though Mon Mothma was like, I can't give you literally anything to help. Bye.
Or even the subcontractor in Phasma that may or may not be a subcontractor.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but there may be something to that. Chris, do we ever get any more information about that in the later books, or is it just kind of like what it is?
About,
I'm
sorry, what was the...
Nora's motivations, like, did she join the rebellion to join the rebellion, or did she actually join to look for her husband?
Oh no, she absolutely joined to look for Brenton.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
See? Spoilers as promised. I know, but I think even though... So, Chris is the assumption that he would also join and that her joining would help her find him.
I don't think this is a spoiler. I think this was briefly mentioned in Aftermath. But she joined because he was taken in the hopes that her journeys with the Rebellion would lead her to finding him.
Okay.
Gotcha. So she just probably thought that was, like, the most pragmatic approach or something. Yeah, she still could have, like, not done that, though. I don't buy it. Sorry. That's my take.
This is hot takes.
Speaking of skepticism, let's talk about Sinjir. So when it comes
to... He loves drinking.
He sure does love drinking. Sinjir, rather like me, loves drinking. In terms of him and betrayal, he kind of says it, really, at the end. Like, his entire life has been betrayal, because that was his career as a loyalty officer, was to... I think he's always been the Empire's enemy, because his whole job was to just, you know, root out corruption, or... Not corruption, really, but, you know. Just, any
disloyalty.
Well, yeah, because he's a loyalty officer. Yeah, I got that. Thank you. I was trying to find a better word that didn't have the word loyalty in it.
Is it gritty?
You're in a mood this evening, sir.
Hey, just in Chris's defense, oh my god, I can't believe I'm saying that. In Chris's defense, we needed a... Me and Kate are both just like wafers in the wind today.
Could we take like a cut of that, of you saying in Chris's defense, and just give me a button that I can just press?
Fuck no. I'll send that to Shannon, and she's the only one who's allowed to press it.
Oh my god, yes.
At ShannonJoy 26, follow her.
Oh my god, you remembered someone's Twitter handle. Okay, Chris, shut the fuck up and let me talk. Good lord. Women are talking, Chris. Sinjir's entire life has kind of been centered around betrayal, because he was a loyalty officer and he was, like, really fucking good at his job. And he kind of says it at the end of the book. He says that the Empire has always been his enemy, because the entire purpose of his life has been to just go around and find dissidents and amongst his, you know, the people who are on his side, quote unquote, and just get them super arrested and super executed. And then when he saw his chance to leave, he was just like, well, it seems like he was like, how much different is this than what I was doing every day, except now I'm not a horrible person who is murdering people.
But like, is he not a horrible person? I mean, that's like his whole arc and story, right? Is like him being like, well, I did one the right thing. Am I not a shithead anymore? I don't know. Where is my beer?
Where's my beer, indeed? Well, I mean that is an open question for him, but I mean, like, at least he's like not adding more horrible things to the very long list of horrible things he's already done.
Totally.
Yeah.
Although, like, is he going along with the plan to make money? Because he totally is like, hey, I want a better cut, blah, blah, blah. Or do you think he's really trying to take the Empire down?
I don't think he knows yet, honestly. I think he definitely starts out that way. You know, just planning with Jas and Esmel's kitchen about, you know, how to get into the Satrap's Palace and all that, which was just hilarious scene, by the way, because they've got the fucking... They're doing that thing, like, where there's, like, the napkin dispenser and the salt
shakers.
The, like,
fucking food and, like, kitchen utensil map.
So
funny. I was fucking dying.
Oh, my God.
Everybody
knew. How did you come up with that?
That was hysterical. They're like, huh, this looks like the Satrap's Palace. And they're just looking at each other like, how did you figure that out?
Shit.
Oh, my God. So funny.
Probably because it's, like, the only thing that is, like, notable in the place that we are in. But sure, go for it.
So good.
It's just like a bumbling like comedy of like, fuck, they figured out our very obvious plan.
I know. And I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for this fucking napkin dispenser.
Oh, it's too good. Stop.
But I think towards the end, when Honora's wondering who turned them in and she automatically assumes it's Singer and not Temin, I think we're meant to see that Singer's kind of turning from this path that would be predictable for him based on his, you know, past history. So I think he's like kind of, he's like sort of coming around to actually actively being a good guy, but he's still kind of in this nebulous place of, I don't know, being pissed drunk and sad at himself, etc.
Yes.
Beautiful.
God, I fucking love Singer.
Right? We're gonna
Have we seen any? Have we seen other characters like him in Star Wars?
I mean, I think I've said it on maybe the first or second Aftermath episode, but he feels most similar to Kanan for me. But it's me, and I will find.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we talked about that a little bit. Sorry, duh.
Literally an excuse to talk about Kanan because it's me. He died, guys. I'm still mad. Chris, do you have anything to add?
I'm just trying to think of other Star Wars characters. Or like,
I mean, it's okay if we haven't. I haven't really come across any. I mean, totally see the Kanan aspect, but I'm thinking of like other people who have defected from the Empire, and he's very different from other people that we've seen defect.
Well, yeah, because he's hilarious.
And he just like, fucking hates himself.
I know. I mean, I think...
Like, so outwardly.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think, like, people who... The previous characters who we've seen defect, I think they definitely feel remorse and they feel guilt and all that. But he just like, you know, if you just punched him in the face and left him in a ditch on the side of the road, he'd be like, yeah, I deserve this. You know, which we don't necessarily get from any other character.
Yeah, it's a self-loathing that's fairly unique.
Oh, yeah. And horribly relatable, la la la.
It probably has a lot to do with, like, I mean, that, I don't know what predates what, like, if he had that part of his personality before he got into the Empire, or if the being a loyalty officer made him that way. But, I mean, it makes sense that he's a loyalty officer, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I would love a short story with him, like,
in the more Singer.
Always more Singer. Pretty please. I've read some great fanfic, but obviously it's not canon, alas.
Kate, talk about Jas now.
Yeah, please. Let's talk about Jas, the other person who thought she was being completely obtuse with the fucking napkin dispenser. So, obviously she's a bounty hunter, so she technically has no loyalties. Whether that means she can technically betray anybody, I don't really know. But, you know, she switches her allegiance from the Empire to the New Republic because she follows where the money goes. But the other thing is that there's this, even more so than we see in Singer and maybe any other character, there's a real war between her head and her heart, I think, throughout the novel. You know, she knows what's, I guess, I don't know, like, best bounty hunter practice or whatever you want to call it. But she has that same streak that she says she saw in her aunt, who kind of got her into this whole business, where you know, she can't help but get herself involved in underdog sorts of causes. So I just wanted to talk about that, like how, like, ways that she, I guess, betrays her instincts, but also her training, and that sort of thing.
I mean, just working with people generally, right? I mean, we talked about that, but I mean, I think she's betraying her. We see at least some of this, like, internal dialogue of her being like, I don't know whether or not I should work with people. This seems fucked. I can't trust anyone. I'm a bounty hunter. So I think that's, like, the first big betrayal we see from her with herself.
Definitely. Especially with, I think we also talked maybe, I think it was like two episodes ago, about her generation of bounty hunter and how they don't really travel in packs as they used to, or however you want to put it. Kristen, I think you wanted to Talk about a recurring Star Wars topic that is also, it's a little too close to home. I saw this on the outline. I was like, oh, God damn it. I already talked about therapy. Like, all right.
I know. So, we talked about it last week, like, to some degree. I brought it up because, like, I wanted to talk about it on the outline. But, I mean, on the outline. I brought it up because I wanted to talk about it in the wrap-up. But we ended up talking about it a lot in the context of the book last episode. So if you are interested in Unwanted Blood Family, you can go ahead and listen to episode 45 and also the rest of this book because it good. But, I mean, I don't think we've necessarily... We've skirted around it a bit, but I don't think we've ever talked about it as kind of like this overarching theme, especially outside of like the Skywalker family. So I think there's this, I mean, from Temin's point of view, especially at first and like kind of through like the first probably two-thirds of the book or so, you know, he sees his mom as unwanted blood family. Like, I can take care of myself, I know what I'm doing, I am a teenager, so we all know that's not true, but also, like, you fucked off and I stayed alive, so, like, I kind of have, like, a loyalty to myself and not to you at this point.
Right.
And we see, I mean, we obviously see that with Luke and Vader, and we see that with Leia and Vader when we're talking about Bloodline. Like, when that comes out, it's, like, the whole fucking point of the book.
Yep.
So, I don't know. It was interesting to see it come up again. It's definitely a theme in Star Wars.
Yeah, definitely.
Do we see it anywhere else? It sounds like you have another point too. Sorry.
Well, Kate. I mean, we see it, like you said, it's constant pattern in the Skywalker family. You know, we've got it in the sequel trilogy with Leia and Kylo, but this just kind of struck me. But I feel like in terms of just talking about quote-unquote normal people in the galaxy, I think Temin's relationship with Nora is probably closest to Hera's relationship with Cham at the beginning of Rebels, where she kind of resents him because he was always putting the Free Ryloth movement over her, and he really, retreated into...
Mm-hmm.
That sort of resistance work, especially after Hera's mom died, and we don't know how her brother died, but assume he was also, you know, horrible and possibly connected with her mom. I don't know. Because they don't tell us anything about Hera's mom, blah, 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 blah.
Moms don't matter in Star Wars, DM.
I know. But yeah, definitely feels like that. Like, Temin definitely feels like Hera did that. He has a parent who put... a whole planet or a whole galaxy before them, and that's kind of a shitty thing to feel. Like, hi, can you take care of your kid now? Okay, I'm gonna build a murder bot now and pretend I hate you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's hard because, like, it's war, right? And so you expect to have war orphans, like, is the term that we hear, I mean, in life, but also in Bloodline specifically. About how Leia's a war orphan.
I mean, we see war orphans in this book, in the interludes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, at the same time, you don't expect, like, kind of like how Temin kind of trained himself to think of his mother as dead, or as good as dead, because, you know, if your parents die, that's one thing. And even if you didn't want them to go, that's still one thing. But if your parents chose to leave, that's a whole new level of needing to build up these defenses around you.
Awkward.
To create this sense of they don't matter to me and I don't want them because they didn't want me.
Yeah, like, deadass, this is shit that I have to talk about in therapy. It is so annoying talking about it on the podcast.
Which is why you put it on the outline.
I know, I was going to say, this is not my fault.
But it's so good, though. I know it's not your fault. No, but I mean, like, it, and I'm just going to get too real here, so if you guys... want to fast forward 30 seconds if you don't want to hear about you talk about therapy. But one of the hardest things that I've had to deal with like my new therapist, she was like, we have to figure out how you're gonna mourn your alive mother. And I was like, what the fuck? how am I supposed to do that? But it's like, it's seriously like this, and I'm like, I'm a little better now, so I can talk about it, but but it's fine. I'll edit it out, but I mean, it's totally like this real thing where it's like, you don't want this person to have like say over your life anymore, right? And that's really what it is. And then they come back, they fucking kick the door in, and they're like, hey bitch, I'm here. And you're like, what are you fucking, nobody, go away, you left, like, you made a choice already,
surprise bitch.
Yeah, surprise bitch. Exactly. But I mean, it very much feels like that when you're on like the receiving end of someone leaving. It's like, when they come back, you're like, hey, you made your choice. I'm trying to, like, get over this. You made your choice. It fucked me up. And now I'm not ready to undo all of that. I mean, that's war for you, right?
Right, absolutely. And I think it's kind of interesting talking to you, Keeks, about Temin and his mindset and his attitude towards Nora, because I think obviously, we do not come from the exact same circumstances that Temin's dealing with, but, like, we've undergone analogous things with our own families. And it's interesting to me that, like, immediately I was like, oh, yeah, I get why Temin's acting out, and I get why he's so angry and why he's being a little shit. And whereas when Chris first read this book, he was like, I don't understand why he's be so fucking annoying. And I was like, but this, you know?
He broke. Yeah. He's broken.
He real broken. Mm-hmm.
She broke him.
Right. So, Chris, fuck you and your nuclear family.
No. Love you, Chris. No, we know you have your own problems.
I love
they get to be different than ours.
I love my in-laws. Okay, more well. Beer. All right, Chris, I'm going
to
let you talk now.
Cool. Sorry to bring the pod down, because that hits way too close to home for me and Kate, and now we're both going to moonwalk out of the podcast. But
it's fine. I already took today off because I have depression.
So right now it's my turn.
Right. Yeah, I'm gonna let you talk now. Go, toothpick.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to talk about is reading this book, particularly the second time for me. I tweeted about this a couple weeks ago, if you follow me on Twitter at Chris Sedor. Is this book just feels like Star Wars. Like, more so than some of the other books that we've read. It's absurd and it's fanciful and it's heavy and laughable all at the same time, and it feels like Star Wars. Like, there's one sequence where I was really struck by this, and that's on the roof of the communication station where Sinjir and Temin are fighting off TIE fighters and stormtroopers, and Bones catapults himself off of the roof, cannonballs into the window of a TIE fighter, which then knocks into another TIE fighter, and then Nora comes in and saves the day. It is just, it's classic Luke randomly having a grappling hook to, like, Tarzan across the Death Star chasm. Like, it's ridiculous and wonderful, and I don't know, I loved the tone of this book. I thought it was really struck the space western feel of the original Star Wars, and I want to talk about kind of the tonal differences between this and some of the other books that we've read, and like what they add to the books and what they add to the universe.
Right. I think one of the fun things is that this book, as I've said before, I really like it when various books play with tone and genre and all that. But also it's fun. It's always fun to be reading a Star Wars book and be reminded that it's actually a Star Wars book. Chris and I just watched Return of the Jedi today, and there's, you know, there's been a lot of chatter on the internet about the opening bit where they're trying to get Han out of Jabba's palace, and it's just like, what the fuck was Luke's plane here? Because it's a goddamn mess. And it's just, it's kind of one of those things, except Chuck fits it together a little bit better because he's not George Lucas, but, you know, it's one of those things.
Well, and like, how is only one walker going to be tripped by a tow cable? Like, this is just just random ass things. Star Wars, I love you, random ass things. But yeah, I mean, my Chris, I think you had said when you read this for the first time, it didn't really feel like Star Wars to you. And can you kind of like go into what changed?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I think that for me, it was partially the subject matter and how it feels. I guess I think the first time I was expecting it to be different because I was expecting it to be, you know, everyone's happy and like figuring out like what Luke and Leia and Han are up to, and like, but from a position of like things are going well because we beat the Empire at Endor. Whereas like this just feels very much the same as Star Wars. And I feel like that's something that I didn't appreciate the first time I read because I wanted it to be different and I wanted it to be more. But it's not. And that's the beauty of it, is that it is Star Wars and that the characters and the events that happen in the Skywalker saga are blips on the radar that can't change the tone and the nature of the galaxy.
Totally. I mean, I think part of the reason, I touched on this either two episodes ago or last episode, but I talked about how this felt super Star Wars to me, and I think a lot of that has to do with what's come out media-wise since Disney took over. And I mean, like, part of it is when we think about Mr. Bones, I'm like, oh, who am I picturing in my head? I'm picturing, like, a janky, like, bone-covered K2SO. Like, he's, like, this sassy... Like, you know what I mean? It's not quite mm-hmm. the same, but I, like, have this other proxy of this, like, murder bot in my head who we know is actually, like, a good guy. Like, a good big, giant, humanoid sort of droid. And, I mean, I think, like, that helps, at least with, like, making it feel like Star Wars. I'm like, oh, I have something to picture. And I mean, not that he's exactly like K2SO, but we have a good big droid that's not, you know, a protocol droid, right? mm-hmm. To like reference, yeah. I mean, it just felt super Star Wars to me. I think you know, keeping K2SO in the conversation, I think a lot of that was probably because Rogue One, how different Rogue One was, and also how different The Last Jedi has been. You know, and continued to prove to be since it came out in a good way, as far as I'm concerned. It's just kind of like broadening the horizon for me as far as like what I think of as what Star Wars is capable of and like what feels like Star Wars.
Right. I was going to say exactly that what Star Wars is has definitely become a much more encompassing thing.
And I feel
when do we talk about that? We talked about it in like a wrap up somewhere, I think. Like, what defines a Star War?
Yeah, probably.
I don't remember what it was, but I think it was another wrap-up, but anyway, go ahead, Chris, sorry.
I was just going to say, and I feel like the additions to the universe of, you know, your Rogue Ones and your Bloodline, your political thriller, your Battlefronts, all these different tones of media makes it that much more special when you read something like this that is so unabashedly campy.
Right. I think, and that's definitely also, I think I've said this before, but that's also definitely how I felt when I read A New Dawn by John Jex Miller, which is another novel I think feels especially quote unquote Star Wars-y. It mm-hmm. was just, I mean, obviously I've been having a blast reading all these books, for the most part, and all the different genres and everything else. But like, there's something like, really good and nostalgic and kind of almost comforting. Like, it's kind of like coming home, you know, when you read a book that is very much in the spirit of the original saga movies. They're all good stories, Brent.
They are all good stories, Brant. Kate, do you want to go into some of your favorite talk? It is wrap-up time, so you get to English nerd out a bit.
It's word nerd time. I think I mentioned this topic a little bit on our first episode about Aftermath, but longtime reader here of Chuck Wendig's blog, which covers a lot of things, but a lot of the time it covers the writing life, the act of writing, what it takes, you know, to stick your ass in a chair and put your fingers on the keyboard and, like, do the thing. And it's called Terrible Minds. What?
I just thought there was a tonal shift there where you're like, I'm going to stick your ass in a chair and stick your finger to a keyboard. And it really, it's just ingrained in me that you were talking to me there.
Chris, I've trained you well.
I know, exactly.
That's what it is. Hashtag marriage.
I know that tone.
Kate has a mean tone. It sounds like she's talking to me.
I'm sorry, you were making a great point about Terrible Minds.
Yes. Terrible Minds being the name of his blog. Chris, blink twice if you want if you want out of this marriage.
Podcast listeners, just listen to me blink and call for help.
Ew. Ew, I'm thinking about blinking noises now. It's so moist.
God, but this is such a disgusting fucking podcast.
Yeast! So anyway. So as I've God damn it. As I said, been reading a lot about his writing philosophy and all of that. And one of the things that he says a lot, especially lately, is how character-driven his writing is. You know, he doesn't sit down and necessarily, like, write out a plot and then stick in characters and then, you know, flap around, like, action figures to get from point A to point B. He starts out with characters, and he really gets to know them, and what he says is that character drives plot, you know, like, what happens if I put you in this situation, what are you gonna do, and what's gonna change? So, with that in mind, how do we see that writing philosophy of his in this book, and was he successful at executing his own method, or whatever you want to call it?
I mean, I think the answer is yes. Especially, like, when we look back on all of our episodes and we, like, reflect on what this podcast is, right? Like, it's not a book review podcast. We're kind of analyzing what everybody's doing and how it fits into the bigger Rubik's Cube of, you know, the bigger 8x8 Rubik's Cube of the Star Wars. But I mean, almost everything we've talked about has been character-driven, especially, like, the first episode where it's like, well, let's talk about a character from each of, like, the first, you know, like, chapters or whatever. I mean, I think he's done a phenomenal job doing that, and the fact that I even remember anyone's name is just, like, a testament to how character-driven I think this book is.
That is a feat in and of itself, but also there were so many fucking characters in this book, and you kept them all straight.
I did okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the interludes were their own thing, but I think the main characters I basically kept pretty okay. So that is literally a feat. Before we got on mic, oh no, this wasn't even before we got on mic. This was just, you know, 40 minutes ago. I forgot the name of the Dagobah system. So, and ask me how many times I've seen Empire Strikes Back. The answer is, like, the limit does not exist, as it is with most people. So, you know, it's just my fucking brain. It hates words.
Which is why you're doing a book podcast.
That's right. Yep. I can read.
I just really enjoyed that, like, you're talking about the Star Wars universe and, like, trying to find a descriptor of how, like, vast and ranging it is. And your descriptor was an 8x8 Rubik's Cube. That is the limit of your imagination. 5 extra squares on each side of a Rubik's Cube.
Fuck!
I wanted to, like, make a... How about, like, an ever-expanding Rubik's Cube?
All right, okay, there we go.
Fuck yourself.
Oh, my God. Why do I do this pod with you people?
I don't know. We're the worst.
Do the next episode with Hamlet. It's fine. Hamlet, he's sleeping.
Hamster of the pod. Kate, not to, like, get too touchy-feely with you, but, like, you just did a creative nonfiction, which was, you know, not the way they usually write, but how does this compare to your own, like, science fiction writing style, and not style, I suppose, but, like, just technique? Because I think most listeners probably don't have somebody so close to writing that they can necessarily kind of pick, I don't know, I'm not using that phrase, that they can necessarily ask about how that works. And, you know, I'm just wondering, like, why Chuck's method resonates so much with you.
I think it's because it's definitely a thing I try to do, and I'm not sure I'm so successful at it literally ever. I think part of it is that I think Chuck classifies himself as a pantser as opposed to a planner. So the difference between that means that planners have some kind of outline of where the plot's going to go and such before they start, whereas pantsers go by the seat of their pants and they just see what's going to happen.
I was going to say, is that P-A-N-T-S-E-R-S?
I can't
pantsers. Spell. I'm just making sure I'm understanding the word that you're
pants,
saying.
Like
pants. Like, not like the German seat tanks. Of their pants, yes. Okay.
What?
German tanks are called panzers.
That's not what I said.
I know. That's why I said not.
You said
that.
Not like that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was just making sure I was understanding the thing now. That you're saying.
Chris, stop talking. Chris, shut up. Women are talking. Chris is batting his eyelashes at me right now, and it's really uncomfortable.
I'm blinking for help.
Oh.
He's moistly blinking at you.
Any fucking way. Yeah, I think it's something that I definitely try to do in my writing, but I'm not sure how ideas come to Chuck because he has such a great imagination. I really wish that I had his proclivity for coming up with like really bonkers ass shit. Like if you read his blog, he'll like say totally like awesome, but like off the wall stuff. So then I opened this book and I was just like, of course he made a fucking murder droid. That's sure. That tracks. But yeah,
and not only did he make a murder droid, but he's like perfectly characterized and we like totally have a great picture of what he is, even though he's a droid and et cetera.
Right. And so maybe characters come to him first or, you know, situations that he would think are interesting to like throw a character in and then he gets to know them that way. But for me, I usually come up with like scenarios of thing. And I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head. And the only one I can think of is the story I'm working on right now, which sounds horrible. But basically the premise for it was I was just like sitting at home one day and I read a lot of science news because it's interesting to me and that's where I get a lot of ideas. And I was reading about artificial intelligence because that's my area of interest, or at least one of them. And I was just kind of like, what would happen if you bullied your voice assistant so much, and like supposing that like it's sentient, like we always imagine robots and that sort of technology is gonna become, what if she just like kills herself? Like I'm just like, huh, what would happen? How would that, like, how would I get to that point? Whereas I think Chuck doesn't know where he's gonna wind up at the end, because he lets his characters lead as opposed to letting the plot lead. So yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that, Kate. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but no, I mean, this is a book podcast, and if I find it interesting as like kind of the resident audience member here, the resident audience member that knows fucking nothing, not to shit on our audience members.
Nice.
As a fictional audience member that knows nothing, we have none of those. But I think it's something that folks who listen to the pod would find interesting for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it is not a book review pod, right? It is this sort of a deeper analysis. So thank you for sharing that. I know it's always like a vulnerable place that you have to come from when you're talking about like works in progress and your own method of coming up with stuff. But
oh no,
thanks.
I'm totally good with it. See, I got rejected from all my grad school, so I have no soul, so I don't care. Moving right along.
Yeah, right.
Shall I do our social media?
Yeah.
Comments and such like. So we've got two for this go around. The first one is from longtime listener Shannon Joy 26, and she says, "How is Singer the best?" Which is the best question. I know that a lot of people are big fans of Singer, and I am too. So Yeah, no. He's just first of all, he's hilarious, but he has just like such a dark and self-deprecating sense of humor that I just like immediately relate to him because like Chris, we were talking about like senses of humor or something the other day, and it was just like, you know, most people's senses of humor are somewhere, you know, if senses of humor were a bell curve and like in the middle were like normal sitcoms, and then at one end is South Park and then the other end is like really high level black comedy, I only fall at either end. Mm-hmm. And I'm not in the middle ever. So like things I find funny are like I don't know, like The Simpsons and then like Dead Bodies. So and that's kind of, and like I feel like Sinker Fund's Dead Bodies hysterical.
Totally. I think that's probably why this podcast, hopefully people agree with me, but I think it works well. But I think part of why that, like, you know, I think all three of us are people who, quote unquote, laugh at the fucking wrong time in movies. God, I have just been doing this for so long in my life, and I didn't realize it was like a thing. And I was like, oh, it's because my sense of humor is different than other people's. Yes. Like, oh my God. No, like I went to see I, Tonya the other day, and I was like, everybody was like laughing, and I was laughing at all these like fucked up things, and nobody was like, I was like barely laughing at all this fucked up shit. Like when it was at my like $4 theater, so
like when she pulled out the shotgun, like, and it was just like,
yeah. Yes, like I was dying and nobody else was laughing, and I was like, oh, it may,
I know.
Like this is a me problem.
I was like crying.
Not a me problem, it's just like, yeah, no, exactly. Like, I'm sure we laughed. Like, and that's part of like why I love this podcast, is because we don't necessarily take like the road most traveled, you know, like the easiest route through these books.
Right.
Route. Wow. Road most traveled is not a thing, Kristen. Holy shit.
I mean, it is.
Brain.
It's just not the idiom you were looking for.
I know. This is not the idiom you were looking for.
Chris just like did a little hand gesture to support you as a Jedi mind trick thingy. So there you go.
Thank you. It's an audio medium, so our listeners appreciate it.
Yep.
Between that and my blinking, I am 2 for 2.
Well, if you know, Chris, if you sat up closer to the mic, like where I was telling you to, maybe somebody would have heard your moist ass blinking.
Ew! Stop.
I just blinked next to the mic. Did that help? Can you all?
Yeah,
can you
that
all?
Was great.
We couldn't hear it.
Thank you.
Over you banging into the fucking dinner table and creaking it as usual.
I'll
so
boost
you know.
It.
Well, oh well. Guess I'm stuck then.
Sinjir's the best. Shannon was also the best. Was that how the did we get? Is that the point?
I mean, I'm just saying
we're all fucked up.
I know. I was just saying it relates to seeing her on a deep spiritual level, which is why I'm in therapy. But you know, he's a
woo.
No, I do think he's a really. Not only is he a well-drawn character, but, you know, we were just talking about parallels between him and anyone else in Star Wars. And I think he's one mm-hmm. of those characters who's, I mean, there are no new ideas, but he feels really original to this universe.
To the franchise, for sure. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, second thing is from Miranda at Real Baby Bird, who is always quietly listening and lurking in the background because she is nervous.
Hey, she was on the pod once.
She was.
She did great.
Yes, she was. When
hasn't
we were
left
doing
a review.
Wait, really? Oh my.
Of course she hasn't. She's afraid of everything.
God. You just have to smack 5 stars on iTunes and run away.
Well, maybe she's done that. That I don't know.
Maybe
but
she's done that.
Hasn't posted
I bet
a
she's
review,
done that.
Though. She may have rated us. She has not reviewed us.
I bet she's rated us. At Real Baby Bird, just write hi and then do 5 stars, please. Please.
All right. Anyway, what she said was, can you discuss the quote unquote boy who cried wolf bullshit of literary devices where it seemed like somebody was going to die 10,000 times and they never did? Please and thank.
I love Miranda so much, just saying.
I know. Which I think she's referring to that trope that we saw a whole lot because, you know, this is an action book, and so we had cliffhangers at the end of chapters, and so it's just like, did Nora die? Did Nora actually die this time? And then there's a bit where Temin is like falling and then like also trying to like fucking like climb a wall, and then he's like has to like,
and then he crowd surfs.
Right. And then no, and then he's climbing a wall and he thinks he's gonna fall off the wall, and then he jumps onto the stupid ass yacht, and he's just like, there's just like this interspersed thing of where he's just like, fuck, 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 gonna die, I'm gonna die. I was yelling, I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking good. But I mean, I think that's like a great point though, is like, you, this is one of those books where you're never sure like when someone is dead or someone is not dead. It's so fucking real, and I think that's very Star Wars-y.
I think it is.
Spider-Mall.
I know, right? But also, it's one of those things where I think we've talked about this previously, probably when we were talking about Rebels, but we've gotten to this point in Star Wars, and I think this point in media in general, where nobody's safe, I think is what we said. Like, anybody could die at any time. Like, that time they killed Kanan, and I'm still not over it. Yeah, I think honestly that's what makes us feel, I don't want to say tired, because it's not Chuck's fault that that's what's happening, but I think that it is affecting how we read things.
I think it's a fucking troll job. I mean, it made me laugh all the times that Nora almost died, slash died, slash didn't die.
About that, that sense of humor that isn't normal.
Right.
No, but I mean,
yeah, I know, I was like, that made me laugh.
I know,
dead things, right, make me laugh, sure.
But like, you know, like when we think about the original trilogy, and most everyone came out of that thing alive, and that's not really true anymore. And so I don't know, can we like just this, and again, I'm not ragging on Chuck about this, because this is literally not anything he did in this book, and I think, and I was fine with the cliffhangers that, in terms of that personally, but it's just like,
yeah, I thought they were effective, actually.
Yeah, I thought so too. I just want, not this book, other media, to just stop being like, we're just gonna kill characters, and like we just sit around, and I feel like we're just nervous about / speculating more on who's gonna die next, as opposed to actually enjoying the story, and it's just really annoying to me. I don't know.
Oh, I mean, it's the Game of Thronesification.
Good subtweet of, I was gonna say, Game of Thrones. Good, yes.
Right.
Good subtweet to Game of Thrones, right, Kate.
No, I just,
I mean, like the Game of, I think, not to give too much credit to Game of Thrones, because it is, it's a, you know, we can be on this podcast and say, hey, Game of Thrones is problematic, but we can also hold in our hands that we enjoy it and we enjoy problematic things. At least I'm speaking for myself here, but
it is problematic.
It is super problematic, but also I enjoy it, and I am able to hold those two things at once, even though I'm a woman. Look at that. But I mean, like, I think a lot of the, like, kind of Game of Thrones, who's going to die next culture, like, just totally emerged from that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you kill off all your main characters in the, like, the a couple of your main characters in the first season, and you're like, okay, well, yeah, that's a thing we can do, I guess, that we haven't really done on other shows, other than, like, people leaving.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right about that, though, because I think Game of Thrones is kind of the first big piece of media that really brought it into broad public consciousness. So, thanks a lot!
Yeah, like, super, super well followed, I suppose.
Right. So, fucking thanks a lot, guys. Jesus Christ.
Fucking Game of Thrones.
Kanan's alive.
Easter eggs?
Oh my god. Am I gonna read this? I just like happen to like just keep,
no, I think we pick our favorite two of this massive list, because this book is just all Easter eggs.
Yeah. All right, oh, I'm gonna,
it's too many.
I know. Okay,
I don't wanna pick.
I can go. Or Kate, do you wanna go?
I just wanna point out that a few of these are not necessarily Easter eggs from Star Wars, but things from real life that Chuck adapted and ways that just made me start fucking laughing. For example, when we first meet Temin, he is playing fucking Settlers of Catan, like, space version, yep, which made me die, especially because there's a Star Trek version of Catan, but there's not a Star Wars version of Catan, so Chuck just basically made
that. Have we verified that lately?
What?
I said, have we verified that lately?
I'm pretty sure I'm right.
No, I'm checking.
I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Thanks, Chris. Sorry, I'm just like, are you sure?
I've only
though now
ever played Star Trek Catan and not regular Catan, but whatever.
I've never fucking played Catan. I'm just like, take all, I mean, I don't really have any nerd cred, so you don't have any to take from me, but it's fine.
That's completely okay. And the second thing that he does is Jess talks about having a Pizak deck that has on it the pictures and stats for the most wanted Imperials still left in the galaxy, which is, of course, a throwback to the deck of cards that the Bush administration put out during the Iraq War. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, with all the, yeah.
Yep.
Yep. That's all.
It's a thing. Fuck me up, Chuck.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and I have to mention this because, Keeks, I don't know if you've caught this and you would love it because you're really bad at names, but, during the,
thank you.
Yeah. During the, interlude on, fuck, what's the name of the planet, Chris? I never remember. It's with an S.
Which interlude?
Towards the beginning with the farmer dad and his two sons who are being little shitheads because they're on the opposite side of the war. Oh, fuck.
Something is it Seleukumai?
It's Seleukumai, thank you.
Oh my god. Chris, how did you fuck... Oh my god, whatever. I hate how easily just these things come to you. I'm like, still forgetting.
Well,
Tatooine.
Forgot Dagobah, dude. So,
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Very briefly, the dad in that interlude mentions Cut Laquane, who is the clone who defected and married a Twi'lek and has those hybrid kids.
I didn't get that, but you know I love clones.
Yes, so that was for you.
I love that arc. I don't even know if it's an arc. I think it's just one episode, but it's so fucking so good. Yeah, if you're wondering, my clones rewatch is going great. If you would like to be in on it, maybe I'll start a DM. Anybody aww can. I don't feel like letting it take over my timeline because it also took over my timeline the first time I watched it, and it doesn't feel fair. my two favorites, I think I brought the first one up in the first episode, but Wedge has so much sand in his data pad, which so was good. So fucking funny.
How did all the sand in here? Oh my god, that was hysterical.
I don't know. It was so good. And Probs, my other one, is Akbar thinking Akiva is a trap, which are two very like Star Warsy, you know, like those are the ones that I usually pick out or like the low hanging fruit. But I just was fucking dying. I mean, like, it's a trap.
The Akbar one was definitely mine too.
It actually is though.
Yeah, like it's good.
What'd you like, Chris?
I was definitely going to mention the Akbar one. I loved that Temin's talking about where he got Bones' programming, and it's like dancing, and also from some Clone Wars cyborg general, aka Bones' General Grievous, in combat, which yes is why he's so good.
Which is amazing.
Oh, it is amazing.
Oh, there's so many more that I want to mention.
Yeah, also...
he's like a competent clone. I mean, a competent...
Droid. B1.
Droid. Yeah.
Yes.
Also, Morna flying the yacht and trying to get to the Star Destroyer and just being like almost there, because like almost there is like the most boring line from original Star Wars that me and Kate will just like shout at each other all the time, be like almost there.
It's that and it's not my fault.
Yeah, it's those two.
Oh my god. Oh, this is not necessarily an Easter egg because I don't know if it's actually what I'm thinking, but hey Chuck, if you're listening to the pod, there's an interlude on Terrace where there's like this weird group of like dark side cult freaks who are buying what is allegedly Vader's lightsaber from some shady ass black market seller. And I want to know if it's Aurelius Tardassian from Bloodline, because that interlude mentions something being up with her voice, and that's one of her defining characteristics in Bloodline where she's introduced by Claudia Gray. So I don't know if that's her, but yeah. Also, Sabine's in here.
Sabine is mentioned.
Yes.
Yes.
Not by name.
What? Where?
Not by name, but she...
help me.
There's an interlude. I want to say it's the first interlude on Chandrilla where, you know... what's her name is talking to the TV reporter, but she briefly mentions that there is an art installation in a public space of this artist who spray painted a bunch of former Imperial helmets, which is like Sabine stealing Ezra's collection and going ham on them.
Oh, duh. I was like, that sounds like Sabine. Can't be Sabine. Why am I so stupid?
No, she's not mentioned by name, but he definitely, like, it was, this book came out before Rebels.
It's like a callback.
Right.
Yeah.
It came out before Rebels finished, and he didn't know if she was going to live or not, so they made him take her name out, but he was just like, yeah, it's Sabine, on Twitter, like, a few weeks ago.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, did he officially say that? That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
Ah! Awesome. Does anybody have a bonus? Since there were like literally, how many are here? Like 20? Yep.
Yeah.
At least. Yeah, something like that. Does anybody have a bonus that we didn't include that they really wanted to include?
No, I got all mine.
Oh.
My favorites.
The Jawas in the Southern Interlude are selling scrap from Jabba's fucking fat ass evil barge. Like, I don't know. And Boba Fett's armor.
Love a fat ass evil barge. Yep.
Speaking of a fat ass, hi Hamlet.
I did love that. Hamlet. I did love that because like there's always these like conspiracy mongers on Twitter being like, well, Boba Fett could have survived. And this just being like, no, he's dead. Here's his armor.
I know. Like, thanks, Chuck. Also, I didn't mean to like fat shame Jabba, except he's evil. So I feel like just fun calling him an evil fat ass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not evil because he's fat. He's evil because he's a piece of shit.
He's literally turd-shaped.
He is literally turd-shaped. All right, and with that, that is our episode. Yep. That's
he's literally turd-shaped.
Title is going to be literally turd-shaped, and we're done. Thank you very much for listening to episode 46 of the Book Wars Pod.
Oh, no.
Thank you for reading Aftermath by Chuck Wendig with us. Next, we are going to be diving into middle grade, as we mentioned last week, with Legends of Luke Skywalker by Ken Liu. And we're going to be reading the whole book. It's a longer book, but it's large type and it goes very quickly. So we're going to be reading the whole book this week.
So deal with it. Yep. And
it's middle grade, right?
Middle grade, yes.
And
for BBs, for middle BBs.
For middle BBs.
And at ShannonJoy26 is at some point going to be... I'm not sure if, I don't know if we're going to have her on the main episode. Maybe we'll do a bonus. But anyway, Luke Superfan going to come talk to us about why she fucking loved this book and what it adds to Luke's character, especially in light of, I think, of The Last Jedi.
I feel like really interesting. I feel like we could do maybe like a bonus app with her and Nancy. I think that'd be fun.
We haven't asked Nancy.
I was going to say.
Nancy, if we haven't asked you before Luke this, Superfans. Consider this your official invitation.
No, we'll just DM her. Like,
if we're talking about Luke Superfans, we have to bring Nancy Pants into the picture.
Yes, at Nancy Pants. Anyway, also, since that'll only be one episode, in 2 weeks, we're going to be starting another novel. We're going to be reading Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. This is one we've really been looking forward to. I know it's a favorite in the fandom.
I'm so ready.
It's great. So be sure to get that from your library or local indie bookstore. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr, Book Wars Pod on all those platforms. Email us if you want to email us, bookwarspod@gmail.com. And especially if you're at Real Baby Bird, rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Subscribe to both us and the Tachi Station Radio Mega Feed. And if you are so inclined and have the resources, donate a couple bucks to the Tachi Station Radio Patreon. It really helps us cover our hosting and production costs for the show. That is our show. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Book Wars Pod. For Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris, and we will talk to you next week.
Chuck, I hope you're listening.
Thanks, you have large fingers. Anyway.
Stop.
What?
Don't talk about Dad's large fingers.
He has big hands! I don't know what to say to you.